And of course, we're going to take your phone calls now this hour. Dr. Jacques Vallée and Paul Smith, and you on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, where is the conference?
Conference is in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Alexis Park Resort and Hotel. It's going to be the 19th through the 21st of October. We thought we'd pick a relatively cool time in Las Vegas instead of in the middle of summer when we've had it before.
All right, and the website, of course, for people who want more information?
Is irvaconference.org, I-R-V-A, the word conference.org.
Excellent. We're going to take some calls. And Dr. Vallée, I want you to know you are invited on this program anytime you want.
Thank you very much. I'm really enjoying this.
Let's go to the phones. This hour is going to fly by. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
We are fine. Thanks. Go ahead.
I've got a question. This may sound unusual, but I wondered if remote viewing can be done by a visually impaired person, which I am.
Paul, I'll let you handle that one.
As a matter of fact, there's some evidence that it can be. Of course, this is one of those areas where I'd love to see a lot more research done. I think it was the 2004 conference, we had a presenter come who had done, it was more of clairvoyance, not exactly remote viewing, but they're so closely related it almost doesn't matter. She had done some clairvoyance work with a number of visually impaired folks and had some success with it. I think what would be interesting to see, of course, there's different ways people are visually impaired. It can be an optical nerve problem, it can be a retinal problem, or it can be damage to the visual cortex.
Right.
And if it's damage to the visual cortex, and this would be the extreme case, which would be the most interesting, I think, is...
That's what I am.
A visual cortex issue?
No, I have two plastic eyes due to glaucoma.
I understand. In principle, there's no reason why it couldn't work for you. Because the rest of your visual apparatus presumably is intact.
No, the optic nerve is gone.
Is it too? Okay, well, that's not essential either. At least according to the way I think this all works, I think what happens when you remote view, obviously the optical nerve and the retinas are not probably involved, but there is some suggesting that somewhere further downstream in the visual process that some of those brain structures may get stimulated. And if that's the case, you know, then if everything's working other than optical nerve and retinas, you should, in theory, be able to at least get some visual input through a remote viewing process. Now, that's not guaranteed. That's where some research would be very valuable. But some standard perceptual research fairly recently indicates that when we think of a visual memory, then the visual centers in the brain actually get activated. So there's no reason why it couldn't be the case that in a remote viewing experience that those same centers might be activated as well, which, of course, if we could research that with the right equipment, would be evidence for remote viewing.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Paul. Dr. Vallée, your thoughts on, did you ever know John Mack, the late John Mack?
Yes, I did.
Okay. He, you know, of course, devoted his life to the phenomenon of alien abductions. Your take on that, what do you think is happening to people?
I met John Mack first at the home of Lawrence Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
At the Rockefeller Complex in Tarrytown.
He was financing some of the research,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did. Dr. Mack was someone of towering intelligence, not afraid of controversy, as he had shown in his career. And he became, so at the time, we sort of became friends, and I saw him several times after that. We compared notes on a number of cases. I asked him, of course, you know, how do you use hypnosis in your practice? And he said, I've never used hypnosis in my practice. I relearned it when I became involved with UFOs. His practice in psychiatry was addressing completely different issues. And I was frankly disappointed in that, because to me, hypnosis, and again, I don't speak as an expert, certainly in psychology,
sure.
I don't think, from what I've read, that hypnosis is the right way to study abductions. And that's why I stayed away from that whole discussion. I think it's the use of hypnosis, the way it is practiced, is unscientific and unethical. We're using, as you may know, hypnosis is not admitted in, certainly not in California courts, certainly not the way it's practiced currently in the UFO field. It could be admitted, it's admitted in court in very specific cases with very specific guidelines that are not followed by ufologists. The ufologists are untrained in the practice, are not trained professionally, and I think the results are not reliable. I believe that there is a phenomenon there, that these people have experienced something. I've studied about 70 cases of hypnosis. In some cases, the witnesses wanted to be hypnotized. We did not do that. But we instituted a procedure, always with professionals involved. I've never done the hypnosis myself, always, and I would not. But I've brought in professionals who induced a state of reverie that would be conducive to people remembering more. But all the studies I've seen about hypnosis show that you get more data by hypnosis, and you get a lot more unreliable data. So you're not improving the signal-to-noise ratio, if you will.
Back to the phones.
That was my point of disagreement with Dr. Mack.
Okay. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have a, wanted to talk to your guest. I believe his name is Paul. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Paul Smith, yes.
Paul, okay. I only got to listen to a portion of your show this evening, but you were speaking about remote viewing, and just share briefly with you an experience that I have that recurs for me. I do a lot of research. Often late in the evenings, mostly to do with electronics and software development. Mm-hmm. And I spend quite a bit of time on it. And there are certain subjects when I'm working on them, I suddenly feel like there's sort of a block, sort of, you know, like an energy drain, like, you know, it's just time to stop. And I've done research and had interest in these things most of my life. And I don't know very much at all about remote viewing, but I do know that a lot of times I'm really spending a lot of mental energy thinking about a subject and things that perhaps other people are working on. And the question for you was, have you ever had an experience or anything that would lead you to believe one way or another as to whether remote viewing is active or passive? In other words, could it be detected? Could someone know that you're doing a remote viewing, and could they perhaps alter what you see?
Well, any concrete evidence is that it's passive, that it is not detectable. There are stories that some of the remote viewers tell where they feel as if they're out remote viewing, they're in a certain environment, they're a certain, in the area of a certain target, and there's different versions of the story. One is where they encounter someone else who is also out there remote viewing, and that person is aware of them working the target, so to speak. There are occasional stories of viewers who say that they've gone to a target and they were absolutely convinced that someone or something at the target perceived them there as well. Now, I don't know what to make of these. There is no external evidence that any such thing like that happened. And, of course, remote viewing is somewhat notorious for having this overlay, as Jacques mentioned earlier, where your left brain is working while your right brain is working, and the left brain's job is to interpret data, interpret impressions, and it normally does that very well in regular waking life. But when you get into a remote viewing, which is a low bandwidth situation, you're not getting a lot of data throughput, and the left brain has much less to work with, it jumps to conclusions about things and is quite frequently wrong about them. It's quite possible that some sort of imaginative or analytical overlay plays a role in those with those viewers who think that someone or something at the target has perceived them. Of course, on the other hand, without any conclusive evidence one way or another, it is also possible that maybe they were perceived. But even in that case, it's really very much a passive sort of activity. The corollary to it, the other side of it, is called remote influencing, which I think is much more problematic. So, I don't know. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, back to the next wildcard line. Hi there. You're on the air with us.
I'm sorry. Is this wildcard?
It is the wildcard, and I believe it's you.
Mm-hmm. And my name is Caroline, and I live up in Ontario, Canada. I have a question about satellites, so I wanted to speak with Dr.
Vallée?
Dr. Vallée, yeah.
Okay.
Yes?
I want to know, a friend of mine, here's the story. She is absolutely, insistent that there's a UFO just hanging out here over Toronto. And I must admit, I haven't seen it before, and it's quite bright. And I said to her, look, that's a satellite. She said, no, satellites move. She said, like the moon does. She said, so when the planet rotates, the moon is gone. So I said, well, I don't know very much about it, and I had to really think. So can you shed some light on that? This is very elementary, I realize that, but would it stay there or would it not move?
No, an artificial satellite would move quite quickly. In a few minutes, it would cross the sky above your location.
Well, this isn't moving. It's there and it's very bright. Yeah, it's been there. And she says it comes, and then sometimes for a week or so it won't be there, and then it comes back.
Sounds like a planet, doesn't it, Jacques?
My guess would be that that you're looking at a star.
Well, that's what I thought. But,
or a planet, but more likely a star that may be seen through clouds or through layers of fog or some atmospheric condition that makes it seem that it's unusual. And that's a very common, believe me, even astronomers have been fooled by that occasionally. So it's not something to be ashamed of. It's just, learning about what's in the sky.
No, that's fine.
But it's not a satellite.
Well, so it's not a satellite, no. Well, thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.
You're quite welcome.
Okay. What do you think the odds are of us getting hit by an asteroid, Jacques?
Well, fortunately, they are very, 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 very slim, which doesn't mean it couldn't happen. We're very fortunate to be in a solar system where there are some heavy planets that tend to attract the asteroids, like Jupiter. You remember a few years ago when a train of asteroids slammed into Jupiter. It was a really spectacular occasion. Fortunately, the Earth is lighter and doesn't attract as much of the heavy asteroids. We are getting to the point where we can not only detect them, but have a good chance of predicting their trajectory and maybe trying to influence it, for example, by deflecting those things when they are still far away.
All right, next up, east of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Tim from Tampa Bay.
Hey, Tim.
And I know you love the concept of coincidence, but I think I have a theory on why so many heads of state are keeping quiet about UFO data. I'm sure you'll all find it curious that there is no topic under the sun that we can find as common ground for so many heads of state to agree on anything except UFOs and extraterrestrials. But let's say, for example, that the extraterrestrials are, in fact, from another solar system. Well, considering the distance that they would have to travel, they would have to have, among their technology, time travel. Can we agree on that?
It's a possibility, yes, yes.
Well,
when you're traveling in space, you're traveling in time at the same time. Relativity tells us that the faster you go, the more some distortion would happen, and we don't know enough about time to know whether people could, there might be ways of actually folding space-time to move very, very fast from one point in the universe to another.
Okay, thank you. I was hoping you'd be with me on that, because if they do have a means of using time travel to bend time to their convenience to get from another solar system to ours, once they get here, they may not wish for the governments to announce or confirm their presence here until they say so. In other words, it could be their agenda. And the way to keep the heads of state quiet would be, I don't know if you recall the movie It's a Wonderful Life with Jim Stewart.
It's a classic.
Isn't it? I make my kids watch it every year. But anyway, again, by coincidence, Clarence, the angel, was an extraterrestrial who showed Jimmy Stewart what it would be like had he never been born. Now, if the extraterrestrials that visit us want to exert influence over the heads of state to keep quiet about the UFO presence, they can say, look, if you remember that movie, we have time travel at our disposal. We can take you back into your childhood and alter your destiny so that you'll never become who you are today. Now, what better leverage to put over a head of state than to say you will never become who you are? You'll, in fact, wind up making fries at a McDonald's someplace. Does that sound like a viable theory?
Well, it's a good science fiction idea. I think it certainly could be a book or a movie. I think there are more simple explanations first. One of them is, we've talked earlier about the fact that governments must have a lot of data that has never been shared with the scientific community or with the public. That doesn't mean they have the answers. And that's a mistake that we always make in this field. We assume that because somebody has data, that they have the answers. Well, in science, we have tons of data about the sun. There are still things about the sun that we absolutely don't understand. I mean, there are phenomena in the solar corona. There are phenomena about the interior of the sun that we don't understand, even though we can watch the sun every day and we have tons of data about it. Same thing about, say, cancer. I mean, there are hundreds of people who die of cancer every day. You can do autopsies, you can do experiments, you can do analyses. That still, the real solution to the problem of cancer still eludes medicine. And it may be the same thing. It may be that governments have tons of data about UFOs, but they can't make any sense out of it. Suppose you were, the best physicist in the 16th century and somebody gave you, a card from a board from a computer. Somebody gave you a Pentium 3. What are you going to do with it?
Stay with us. Jacques and Paul will be back. We'll take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, about 75,000 years ago, there was an event that occurred that almost wiped out the human life at that time. We're going to talk about that on our next Coast to Coast show. We'll be back in a moment with final calls with Dr. Jacques Vallée and Paul Smith on Coast to Coast AM. Jacques, we haven't had a chance really to talk about your other life, your venture capital life. We'll do that one day when you come back again. I guess, venture capitalists, I think, are one of the main reasons so many great things have happened, not only in this country, but in industry around this planet.
Much of the new technology has been funded and managed by venture capital, and it's a fascinating profession. It's also a lesson in humility, because you have people in your office every day who show you that how much has happened since you went to school and how much you don't know, and it keeps you on your toes.
Frustrating sometimes to turn down a project because you can't fund everything, right?
Well, and you know, every venture capital firm has a list of the ones that got away, the ones that you should have funded and turned into great companies that that you didn't do because you just didn't see the potential. And
back to the phones. You ready?
Yes.
I cut you off though. Go ahead. Finish your story about the venture capitalists.
No, it's just a lesson in humility, and it's fascinating to be in touch with people who are so creative all the time and bring you new ideas.
All right, thank you. First time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Chris from Upstate New York.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Sure. First off, I just wanted to tell you that I really enjoy your show, and I listen to it every night.
Well, thank you for being such a devoted listener. Go ahead.
And I just have two quick questions, if I can ask them.
Sure.
Okay. My first question is for you, George. I know someone that does interviews, and one of the people that he interviewed claims to have alien encounters regularly, if not on a daily basis, and she seems to have a lot of UFO knowledge. And she talked about Roswell and different alien races and things like that. And I just thought it'd be really interesting to have her talk on your show. And I have her contact info if you would like me to pass that on to you.
Yeah, just email it and just reference the fact that you were on the show tonight so I know it was you, okay?
Okay, great. And then my second question is for Dr. Vallee.
Yes.
And Dr. Vallee, do you feel that aliens can be a deception of the media, or what are your thoughts on it? Can aliens have a good demeanor and that the media may be misleading us to fear these aliens?
Well, the media does what the media always does. It's projecting its own interests or the interests of the public at any given time. So perception of what would be an alien has changed over the years. You know, if you go back to the early movies, you know, the day the Earth stood still, and those movies, people perceived aliens as one way. I think the main contribution, the great contribution that Mr. Spielberg made was to show aliens as not necessarily terrifying creatures, but intelligent and curious and rather friendly creatures. We don't know what an alien would, how they would perceive us or how they would interact with us. Or we just don't know that.
Do you believe that fallen angels might have been perceived, Jacques, as extraterrestrials?
I think that as we discussed before, as you go back in history, the same phenomenon that we tend to interpret today in terms of space aliens would have been interpreted in terms of demons or angels or ghosts or certainly fairies and leprechauns and so on. When I did the research for Passport to Magonia, I found that essentially when you strip out the cultural parameters, you find the phenomenon is the same. That people were describing walking around in the countryside and suddenly being confronted with smaller creatures and objects that did strange things, lights that flew very rapidly and could land and take off and leave traces, and again, throughout history.
Okay, next up, let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. Hi there.
Evening, gentlemen. This is Stan from Louisville.
Hey, Stan.
My question is for Dr. Jacques.
Okay.
I was listening to Stanton Friedman several years ago on his program, and he was saying that Sweden had an aggressive program where they were sending fighter jets up to chase these things, and they were putting out public knowledge as to basically everything they knew about aliens. Did we find out anything from Sweden? And what's your opinion on Stanton Friedman, sir? And I'll hang up and listen.
I have a lot of admiration for Stanton Friedman. We agree on many, many things. We disagree on a few of them, but that's always an honest disagreement and a fun discussion. I have a lot of respect for the people who spend a lot of time in the field because it takes a lot of dedication, hard work, hard research. And Stanton is one of the people who have been there and done that and spent the time. I don't know much about Sweden. There are a number of reports that have come from Scandinavian countries that, that have been very open, where there was the testimony, the records were published. There are reports in Norway. There is a series of experiments going on where they are tracking lights that seem to happen repeatedly over the same areas of the country. Those have been very well run research projects. Now, there were a number of reports in right after World War II of what they called strange rockets, ghost rockets over Sweden and all of Scandinavia. There was a lot of research that was done at the time by the Allied Services and by the U.S. Air Force. I don't think all of that has been published. It's still somewhat of a mystery to me.
Jacques, I'm curious if you looked into it all, because you weren't very public then. But in 1997, the Phoenix Lights, where even now their former governor claims that he believes it might have been an extraterrestrial craft of some type. You heard about that?
I don't know much about it. I've read okay. the same information you have. I'm aware of those reports. I don't know what to think, frankly.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
George, I'd like to ask Dr. Vallee if there is such a thing as a spontaneous remote viewing experience. I awakened one morning and knew I had to be somewhere and didn't know how to get there. When I was considering calling my friend, it was like a little TV camera went on in the center of my forehead, and it zoomed in on this gravelly area where there was a red tent, a blue tent, and a white tent, and it was very vivid. And then it clicked off, and I thought, why did I see that? How strange. I didn't connect it with where I was going. Later that afternoon, when I found directions to the Long Beach area, I found myself driving on a gravelly road, and there was the red tent, the green tent, and the white tent.
Mm. Now, we'll let you both touch on that if you want. You first, Paul.
Well, yes, actually. Spontaneous RV, if we want to call it that, certainly happens. There's a long history of spontaneous psi or spontaneous psychic events. People report in all kinds of circumstances, situations. And the fact is that everybody has the underlying faculty that allows us to have these kind of experiences. And there's two ways of experiencing them. Either you can be taught how to do it, or somehow you just happen to be in the right mental framework and the right circumstances at the right time when it just happens to you. A lot of psi events, spontaneous psi events, occur when there's some kind of trauma that happens to someone distant from you that you're attached to, but not all of them. They can sometimes be just interesting little vignettes like you described here.
Okay, and Jacques, do you want to touch on that?
Spontaneous remote viewing absolutely happens. It can happen in dreams, and it can happen in waking reality.
Very good. Let's go next to our next wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Chris Fletcher?
Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Yes, actually, my question is for both of you. I'm a big science guy. I like to go to the NASA websites and look at the pictures that the Hubble telescope takes and whatnot, but I'm just trying to figure out. They just recently put Pluto as a planet, no longer a planet. All right, they can see billions and trillions of miles away with this telescope. And this planet, I think they found one bigger than Pluto out in the Kuiper Belt.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out, how do they call this, they can call that another dwarf planet, but they're not calling Pluto a planet still.
Well, it's kind of a, it's a problem of nomenclature. What do you want to call a planet anyway? And it gets to almost like theological arguments, you know, about nomenclature. I still think of Plato as a planet, frankly. I think those are very, very fine distinctions. Of course, as the technology improves, we discover more and more and more objects in the solar system, and it becomes very confusing. So there is a need for keeping it clear. I think we'll continue to discover members of the solar system that we didn't know were there as we go further and further away.
Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Yes, hi, you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, I disagree with Jacques Vallée. He has this notion that extraterrestrial, that these aliens are not extraterrestrial.
Well, no, he didn't. He didn't roll that out totally.
I know. I agree. He didn't rule it out completely. But I just like to remind him that the physics, that Earth is only a fraction of the physics, chemistry, matter, and element that's out there, and energy. So if aliens are coming here, they're going to most likely have physics and chemistry and elements and matter that we don't have. So, and there's so much I can say, but we got so short a time. But the thing is that he mentioned something about that they merge and they separate. Well, an ET civilization can do that with no problem. You know, I liken to like a toolbox that goes in and out, if you will, but the aliens do it much smoother. So this, and also the idea that these aliens are too human-like, that's also, I would say, okay, also nonsense. Why can't God, which I believe in, create beings to resemble us? I think this whole idea that these are aliens are not ET, I think that's disinformation. The right information is what he had in the beginning, that they are extraterrestrial. And also we're being visited by a lot of civilizations, well, several dozen. What, all of them are from other dimensions or something? You know, I feel that they're all from, and people have been abducted. I'm a member of MUFON. MUFON had an extensive research into extraterrestrial civilizations. People have been abducted, have stated that they are from other star systems, that they just displayed a different technology than what we have. If you took the X-ray machine and put it in the 1600s, that would be considered not anything human-like. But, of course, that was invented, like, in 1895, I believe. So just because we don't understand something, that doesn't give us the right to say that it's not ET. I can go on, but I'll let you go on.
All right, let's get your reaction, John.
Yeah, we don't. I don't think we disagree. What I'm objecting to is the first level extraterrestrial theory, which is stated to be that we're being visited by beings that have evolved on another planet and have come here after World War II to study us because of the age of the atom bomb and so on, and that they are doing a study and abducting people to understand the human race. That is contradicted by a number of things that the witnesses are telling us, including the physical phenomena that you've described, the merging, the changing shape, and so on. And that's why, that's precisely why the phenomenon is so interesting, that it goes beyond that first-level hypothesis, that we need to advance the hypothesis, we need to challenge what we know today about physics. I agree completely with you that an X-ray machine in the 16th century would be regarded as something of the devil. It would be regarded as something that was a magical piece of sorcery. That's why we need to put all that in perspective. And again, let me give you an example about a particular case, if we have a few more minutes.
Yes.
There was a case in Northern California I became very interested in, and I described it in a book of mine called Confrontations. These people were miners. They had a claim in Northern California. They had been working the claim. They were seeing a UFO repeatedly. They saw it three times. It was sort of egg-shaped, about 15 to 20 feet in diameter, and it always landed at the same place. Ufologists went there and did a good bit of research, and they published the case, and the UFO had taken off, and they said it took off vertically in a wooded area. Well, I went there, and I sort of became friends with these people, with the witnesses, and when they're repeatedly, I believe in long-term study of these cases, not just a one-time interview. And I was puzzled by one thing when I looked at the place, that, and I asked them, well, exactly, tell me again, how did it take off? And they said, well, it took off at an angle. And I said, well, if it took off at an angle over here, it would have to go through the trees. And they said, well, it kind of went through the trees. Well, now, that's not quite the same thing, is it? So I said, well, that's not what the report in this journal, in this UFO journal, and I won't tell you which group, but you can guess, that's not what the report says. And they said, well, you know, the man who came here was so nice, and he really believed in this extraterrestrial physical thing. We didn't have a heart to tell him that the thing went through trees. Well, all of a sudden, it's not quite the same. It could still be extraterrestrial, of course, but it's not the same kind of extraterrestrial. And in the abductions, yes, there are claims that of interaction with the beings, but those are completely contradictory all over the world. It's as if whatever is said is symbolic rather than factual, and I've never been able to find a pattern in those.
We're gonna probably not take any more calls because we've only got about a minute or so left. Jacques and you, Paul Smith. Paul, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on the program again, as usual, my friend.
Oh, I'm always happy to be here. It's always a lot of fun.
We didn't get a lot of time to talk about dowsing, but we should one day, because that's an incredible technique that people can use to harness all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know Ramon Grace, Paul?
I'm sorry, Ramon Grace? No.
Yeah, you don't. Okay, he's a dowser, and he's a darn good one. So
interesting. I'm always looking for folks like that. So
they're out there. Paul Smith, his latest book, by the way, Reading the Enemy's Mind. And you, Dr. Jacques Vallée, I want to thank you again for coming on the program and for coming out. It's been a long time for you, Jacques.
It's a pleasure being on your program, George.
Okay, my friend. Dr. Jacques Vallée, I've wanted to talk with him almost since the beginning of time. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Gina Salvati, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDuceur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.